If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And Lakers last night got one of my favorite wins of the season. They really step up on the defensive end and beat the OKC Thunder 116-104. And you would have never known it how the game started. OKC jumps all over the Lakers to start out. It's a 13-2 start. Lakers turn the ball over six times in the first 6 minutes. And then the bench comes in and immediately flipped the game. And I thought, D, that was one of my favorite two-way games from several guys. I thought, in particular, the perimeter defense in that game. Austin did a great job on SGA. Spencer Dinwiddie came in and kept that up and was just defensively really good. I'd love to get into more detail about him. D'Lo had four steals and I thought was helpful defensively. AD, I thought it was his best defensive game in a few games. Overall, I thought the way the team defended, this is part of like, it's such an interesting Lakers team because they have this in them. They just don't get to it all that often. But I thought it was the best defensive performance in a long time. And Darvin echoed that in postgame. So what did you see from a really good win against OKC?
Yeah, I certainly agree about the defensive effort being the driver for this win. Like the shot making from D'Lo and to a certain extent Austin. I love Mike's question to
the overshadowing
the post game. So there was great shot making and some really strong offensive performances from a lot of guys, but the Lakers won this game because of their defense. And you mentioned a lot of guys. I thought LeBron had a really good backline defensive effort in this game in ways that he is not always done. He understood the assignment in this game, particularly as a rebounder. AD was away from the basket a fair amount, even though he got three blocks. The Lakers switched more, and then he was on Chet a fair amount. And LeBron did a really good job of sweeping the defensive glass, I thought, as a backline rebounder. He had that really animated play defensively after he had a bad turnover. He broke up a lob and then he came in and tipped away a rebound, like in order to sort of help secure the ball. So a lot of LeBron stuff there. But Pete, the defensive effort that Austin and Dinwiddie had against SGA and Jalen Williams, mm-hmm. too, because the Lakers were switching like on the perimeter, I thought those won the Lakers the game. Basically. So Shea had 20 points, but he needed to go 9-for-9 from the foul line in order to get to those 20 points. He was only 5-for-13 from the field. Jalen Williams was only 2-for-9, I think, from the field. A couple of stats here for you, Mike, and this is per the NBA's matchup data. So take it with a bit of a grain of salt, I suppose. But when Austin Reeves was listed as the primary defender, Thunder players shot 1-for-10. From the field. And when Spencer Dinwiddie was the primary defender, OKC players shot 0-for-7 from the field. And so you would not think that Austin and Dinwiddie are these lockdown guys, but Austin has been locked in defensively a lot mm-hmm. more recently. And I thought his understanding of space and his defensive discipline were among the, like, at the highest level it's maybe been all season, he did not fall for any of the Shea jukes or ball fakes or anything. He stayed down. He contested well. Dinwiddie had that great block of an SGA jumper.
And an ISO.
I mean, that's so rarely,
hard to do.
That rarely happens. And I thought Dinwiddie's timing on his contests were just superb last night. And so just a lot of really focused and attentive defensive performances from your perimeter players against a team that skews so perimeter heavy. And so we always give our defensive flowers to AD, and to a certain extent, we give them to LeBron the way that we did the other game against the Clippers when he sort of did his job against Kawhi late in the game. But we have not been handing out a lot of defensive flowers, Mike, to the Austin Reeves and Spencer Dinwiddie's of the world, but they deserved it this past game for sure. And I thought it was a driver of the Lakers win.
Just quickly on Dinwiddie, there had to be something behind his positive net rating and just general positive impact despite his low usage on offense. And I think clearly the defensive end, he's just come in, you know, maybe better than even a hardened league pass veteran might have thought coming in. So that's encouraging. And I think that tells us something moving forward. As for Austin, I was looking up in the third quarter and I wanted to check with you guys, and I got busy doing something during the game and was like, did Shea just orchestrate a switch to get Austin off of him? And I think it was a couple of possessions, and he basically called Rui over to try and go at a different matchup. And that kind of tells you what you need to know on in its own right, that he was actually having enough issues with Austin just sort of staying home and not going for fakes. And that was encouraging. So Shea had come into this game scoring at least 30 points in 8 straight. And easily, like way over 50% from the field in every single game, except for one when he was, I think, 46%. And so he is like a metronome, just clockwork, 30 points, high efficiency, and to not just have 20, but to do it on 5 of 13. It made me a little bit wary of the pregame stat that I had found, because Oklahoma City was literally the greatest second night of a back-to-back team in NBA history.
That was a wild stat, man. When you went on air with that, Mike, I was like, are you serious? How many points are they scoring per game in the second night of a back-to-back?
They were averaging 130 points per game.
7-2 at 130 points.
Yeah, in 9 games. And this is one of those stats that, like, it's true, and then you can kind of, you know, parse it a little bit more after that, because I saw the stat and then I'm kind of double checking it, and I'm like, okay, hold on, but who did they play? And so the who they played ends up telling you something about it. But even when here, first I'll tell you that. So they had played Detroit, beat them by 12. The two games that really skew this are they played Portland twice and beat them 134-91 and then 139-77. And that sure, right there accounts for a lot of the differential. But they, through these 9 games, 7-2, their point differential was plus 18.7. The next highest on the second night of a back-to-back was the 95-96 Bulls, which was, of course, Jordan's revenge tour, plus 13.6, and then the 96-97 Bulls at plus 12.9. And what I love about that stat from the Bulls standpoint, and kind of as a child of Mike, in some of the ways where you guys are a child of Magic, was like, Mike was ready anytime you gave him a slight, oh, it's the second night of a back-to-back? Sure. You don't think we're going to bring the A game tonight? Okay, here it is. Here's the A game, and you're going to get your ass kicked. And so OKC, now clearly not the 96 Bulls, but young, they play a deep rotation. They always play hard. It's just they have clearly an excellent culture there. And so it does make sense if you think which NBA team would be really good in these kind of settings. You would think, oh, say OKC. But the degree to which they had been blowing teams out was insane. And I say all this to say that the Lakers made sure that they did not look like they were a team that played well in the second night of back-to-back. They looked like a team that played the night before and had a tough game in Phoenix. And I had asked you, Pete, to now kick it back to you for some specifics about what was better defensively, aside from the individual effort, like the Austin and LeBron. But there was something in the energy of the way that the team was playing throughout that was impressive. And I wonder how much this now can be. You can at least expect an uptick of where it was now that the Lakers got past that Denver game, which is just a bad matchup. And now Sacramento, who lost a terrible loss, they had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and they're just a game and a half ahead, and that's who the Lakers play in their next game. And I specifically asked AD about it just to, you know, sort of make sure it was on the radar. And it is. So I wonder what you think is sustainable from this defensive force that we saw.
This game is as a coach, what you refer to as blackmail material, in that, like, I've seen you do it. I've seen all you guys do it. It's not it's a matter of like closing out. We haven't brought up Torian Prince, for example. He had 6 rebounds in that game, and several of them were contested. And it's just a certain matter, D, of like, do what you can. If you get beat on a play, you get beat on a play. But there's a certain amount of, in basketball, where you got to fix it and get after it, D. Sorry, you look like the cat that ate the canary, D. What's up?
I was going to bring up the Prince tap away and then tap to himself. Like, we were talking about Dennis Rodman a few pods ago, and that was a Rodman special. Yep. Like, the tip the ball, tip it against the glass, tip it to myself.
Are you talking about Torian Prince and Dennis Rodman?
Hey, man, look, this is why I was laughing, because he was in there doing
Mike,
the work.
Rodman-esque. I will freaking take that. And there's just a level of competitiveness across the board, Mike, that it's like, is that sustainable? If it's not, we're not going to do anything. We're in the last 20 games of the season.
Just for context of Prince. It is Prince's most rebounds in a month. The last time that he had more than five was that game at Boston when everybody, which reminded you me a little bit like the last time the Lakers played with this sort of helter-skelter, like everybody's defending that game in Boston that LeBron and AD didn't play, and Prince rebounded there too.
That's a great call out in terms of the effort and intensity. And it's like the Lakers need to string together a few weeks of good basketball. And it starts with just that level of like, urgency. That's part of what I really like about Dinwiddie, D, is that he plays with a level of urgency. And there's a play where he was matched up with Isaiah Joe and he got lost. He thought Joe was going to come out on to the left side of the court and tried to anticipate that, but Joe faked that way and swept out the other way and was wide open. And Isaiah Joe is one of the better spot up guys in the league. Dinwiddie caught his mistake, you know, a beat later. It was like, oh crap. And there's a certain amount, this has happened so much this year. There have been so many possessions where it's like, I can't quite get there. There's a certain amount of like, you give up on the play. And it would have been very easy to be like, can't quite get there. And Dinwiddie sprinted toward that side and at least made Joe sidestep, right? So he doesn't have all of his weight centered and that ideal type of catch and shoot three where everything's exactly as he wants it. He makes him sidestep and he ends up missing the shot. And Austin on the ball on SGA is, it's like, well, what can Austin do, right? Austin is disadvantaged from a talent standpoint. So let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to get into this topic of like, how do you guard guys when they are better than you, when they're more athletic than you are?
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled. What are you waiting for? They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
I thought Austin put on a clinic in terms of understanding angles and understanding how to beat a guy to their spot. When you're guarding one-on-one, so Austin versus SGA is a perfect example. SGA is taller, he's quicker, and he's stronger. What Austin can do, right, there are certain things that you can control and there are certain things that you can't, right? What Austin can control is how deep his recovery angles are. So what that means is, Austin's guarding SGA. SGA starts putting the ball on the deck. If he moves to his side, if Austin just tries to slide laterally, he's done. SGA is going to get by him. This is pretty much true of any guard. It's the angle of retreat, right? Where he takes that step back and can beat SGA to his spot if he takes a deep enough angle. And so it's a matter of taking that deep angle and then that surrenders the pull-up to a degree and then just get a hand up. And I thought he did a great job of doing that, D. And across the board, there was a level of attention to detail that I've been really lamenting just watching across the league. It's like, we don't play serious basketball from possession to possession. We played a very serious basketball game last night. So to me, it's like, can you compete like that? Can you sustain that level of detail? And if they do, we're in business.
Yeah, and I thought that seriousness was most evident defensively rather than offensively. The Lakers were kicking the ball all the over the court passes, offensively. Man, like, well, it's just like OKC is an interesting team to play. Their defense is an interesting group to play against because they are so aggressive in passing lanes. And most teams just are not like this. They're just not like they. Most teams do not threaten every single pass to every single station the way that OKC does. They are constantly jumping out on the ball. They are jumping out weak side in order to try and come and deflect lobs over the top. They half and three quarter and full front the post. They do all kinds of things to just sort of make passing windows smaller. And if you haven't played against a team like that in a long time and or at all, because most teams just are not this aggressive, you are not used to the fact that, oh, wait, they jumped out on this. But I thought the Lakers were particularly poor at not only adjusting to that pressure early in the game, but also trying low-risk passes in general because they saw a sliver of an opening. And it was almost as if, Pete, that they were so locked in defensively that they were trying to take shortcuts on offense, where usually it's the opposite. Like, oh, we're really trying to do everything we can offensively and defensively we will.
Yeah,
like,
go ahead and take that open jumper in the corner. That's fine.
Yeah, like we'll duck under this screen when we're supposed to try to get over the top. We will try to shoot the gap and cut the distance on getting around this pin down. And then you give up the fade and there's this guy shooting a wide open three and you've got the center looking like, what are you doing? I've got the curl. You don't have to worry about that. But it was the opposite for the Lakers. And the thing that you were describing about Austin, and I kicked this to you, Mike, one of the things that we've been talking about Austin over the course of the season is sort of his drifting more towards being that offensive player that probably got him paid, right? And the defensive intensity, the defensive being locked in has not been there as much. And I'm wondering, Mike, if you've seen a shift not only in Austin of late, but of his understanding of what the asks are going to be of him in this specific starting lineup, where there is no wing stopper in Torian Prince. And I'm using quotes here, but this is how the coaches would use Prince. It would be as this guy who was going to take the toughest defensive assignment on the perimeter. And now the Lakers don't have that. And it's Austin Reeves now who is actually being called up to the majors, so to speak. It's just like, hey, you've got these guys now. You've got Shea, you've got James Harden, you've got all of these guys who are the lead initiator and the top offensive guy. And I'm wondering if you've seen this sort of congruence with Austin of being like, hey, I've got to get after it now a little bit more defensively, and whether or not this final push of the season plays into that as well.
Well, I'll answer your question, Darius, with one of your own terms. And I think that he's just been slotted better into what are the things that he can get done than he was to start the season. And he still could have played better to start the season if he would have just, okay, Torian Prince and D'Angelo Russell are on the floor at the same time. So that means that I need to be the one, you know, because they're not going to do it to lock in this way on defense. But I just think that's a really difficult ask, especially coming off of the momentum that he had offensively as secondary around LeBron playmaker, and not just doing it well in the postseason against Denver in the conference finals, but then again for Team USA, like doing some of those same things. And to come into the season and to expect that was part of what he was going to be wanting to or needed to focus upon. And I think that he's found a way to still be effective other than his open threes not falling as much as, and they did last night, by the way. He was 4 for 5 and a lot of those weren't open. He had the one like ridiculous moon ball over, I think it was J-Dub to start the second half. But I think that ultimately Austin was one of the guys on the team that I was never worried about figuring it out, because he really does want to win. And I think that at a certain point he was able to decide where he could focus more of his attention on a game to game basis. And to see him be able to break out a defensive plus performance against a guy like Shea is a great sign, I think, for him moving forward, and to have it not impact his offense that much, where he was still able to score on that end. And this is coming off a game, you know, where he had a couple of the key buckets against the Wizards down the stretch. Like, there, I just think that he's rounding more into form, and he's settled more into what the groups are around him than the ones that were just not making a lot of sense earlier in the season.
There's a certain amount of, like, do what you can do that I think is – last night's game was a great example of that. And I turned my attention to D'Lo in that respect too. He had four steals, and as you cheekily put it in the post-game, Mike, he, you know, overshadowed that 4 or 5 performance with just – he has the most fun scoring flurries, man, when he hits those – and it's usually 3 in a row, but when he goes on those, man, like, you know, the shot's going up and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. He just hits some unbelievably fun ones. So, but defensively, D, this is a team that I've said a few times, when they're at their best, they get a lot of deflections and steals. And D'Lo's one of those guys, and I think it's been his best year in terms of utilizing his length as a defender. So talk to me a little bit about We talk about Austin from the what can you do type of perspective. Talk to me about D'Lo through that same type of lens.
Yeah, I thought D'Lo was so early during the season. This is exactly what D'Lo was doing defensively. He was getting up into ball handlers a little bit more. He was reaching in a little bit more, just trying to be disruptive. And I thought the steal that he got at the, I think it was the start of the third quarter. It was in the second half where OKC was sort of like lackadaisically just bringing the ball up the court. And I can't remember if it was Shea or if it was someone else, but he reached in and poked the ball away. Then it's sort of a loose ball. And that wasn't his loose ball to get, but he just chased after it and dove and got on the floor and got a steal. And it was that level of, I'm going to leverage every physical tool that I have here in order to make a play that was across the roster happening. I thought D'Lo actually had one of like the tougher defensive matchups because of the way that OKC tries to use Giddy just as a cutter and as someone who they run action for Giddy to score. Uh-huh. Everyone else is just sort of like, hey man, like, you're good enough to go get your own. But if we just leave Giddy alone out here, he's just going to wither on the vine to a certain extent and be sagged off of and take spot up jumpers. He's not going to run many pick and rolls anymore because those are now almost all allocated to Shea and to Jalen Williams. And so they're running Giddy off of all of these cuts, these UCLA cuts up high. They're like diving him inside for like weak side actions. And it's like, oh, D'Lo, man. And Giddy got him a couple of times. But as D'Lo adjusted to the way that, I don't want to say that they were targeting him, but just sort of all of the actions that he was involved with, I thought he stepped up his physicality. I thought he battled as guys tried to get angles on him. And then just like we talked about with Dinwiddie and Austin, Mike, he was contesting high. He was using his length. He was forcing misses. And I just thought it was another game in which collectively and all of the wings decided, like, you're not going to beat us tonight. And we understand what the ask is of us. And again, like we were talking about this offline, it just feels like the team knows that there's only 20 games left in the season. And if they're going to do anything, it's not that it starts now. It's like it already started last week. We got to get to it already.
Pete, I've got a question for you about Spencer Dinwiddie. Why don't we take a break and then get to it.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifydhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Okay, so Spencer Dinwiddie, 9 games, plus 65 for the Lakers. That's the best of anybody. LeBron is plus 57, AD is plus 40. And why? Like, I'll just put it simply there. Why and what does that mean as you enter this next stretch of key games?
The coaches have had an interesting dilemma this year in that the guys who can really guard on the perimeter, on our roster, Vando and Cam especially, have complications on the offensive end. And then the guys who can knock down open threes, and I'm not talking like sniper top of the league type of thing, just make an open corner three when you're open, that can do that are not top-notch guys defensively. And Dinwiddie, to me, is the guy who splits the difference most effectively. He's the guy that again, when he signed, you know, we were talking about, oh, we might see these three guard lineups. And I was like, no, I actually think that with Dinwiddie, it can really work. And it has so far with those smaller groups. He's a guy that provides a little bit of a lot of different categories. And that to me is one of the themes amongst him, Austin, and Rui. They're in different aspects of the game. And especially if D'Lo's getting deflections, you can kind of throw him in this as well. But with those guys in particular is that they're pretty good at a few different aspects of the game. And so it's one of the more severe role changes, D, that I've seen a player have in the middle of a season. If you look at the isolation possessions per game, Spencer Dinwiddie's name with Brooklyn is right up there with all the all-stars around the league in terms of how often he ISO'd. And that is pretty much the opposite role of what he's been for us. He's been that connector guy that can, you know, make one shot and go plus 35, but is rotating and closing out. And I've loved his passing. I love it. And just the pace that he plays with is at a different level than a lot of what our team can kind of like default to. We talk so much about the LeBron being a really critical defender. And I think he's the guy that kind of catalyzes and tells everybody like, oh, it's go time tonight. But when he's not that way, everybody else, not everybody, but most of the other guys kind of seem to follow that lead. Dinwiddie does not. He plays with a certain level of pace. Hayes is that kind of guy too. And so there's a certain level of skill and motor that to me answers that why question. But I kick that to you, D. Why has Dinwiddie been so effective plus minus wise, despite not the counting stats?
Darius, just to interject, so to be clear about it. So he's not hitting shots yet. 35% from the field, 17 for 48, 8 for 29 from three, 28%. And you know that he's a better shooter than that. Those are going to go up. And so he's still been effective without the shot falling yet.
Mike, I was actually going to bring you back in to this because I'm always interested in how players who first come to the Lakers, what their mindset is and what their approach is. And I think that this is amplified after a trade. And so Dinwiddie's media availability, I thought, was super insightful. And I had messaged you guys both like, I don't know if, not that if it's all genuine, like I trust that he's speaking from with sincerity, but he clearly understands how to deal with the media. He is charismatic. He and he knows what to say. There was a lot of, I know, like the coaches talk to me about defense. I know I'm capable of doing that here. I look around the room. I see lots of offensive talent. And I know that the way that LeBron and AD need to be supported is in this way. It's what the coaches have asked of me. And so I'm going to go out there and do my best to do it. And honestly, it was, to me, it rang in my head like, okay, well then show me. Right? Like you're saying all of this stuff. It's sort of a prove it to me comment. And he has gone out and done exactly what he said he was going to do. He's playing hard defensively. He is taking the defensive game plan seriously. And he is taking really all aspects of the game plan on both sides of the ball, like really seriously. And he is showing an attention to detail that is translating, I think, in the success of the lineups that he's playing in, even if he does not have raw individual production or counting stats. And so, Mike, I kick it back to you just because I'm always interested in that sort of new player feel. And there's no one who's been around the new Laker, not just in Dinwiddie's case, but over the course of a decade plus, than you. And so his integration, I think, has been one of the smoother ones from a team perspective, even if individually the numbers aren't necessarily where you would expect them to be based off of what his career has been.
Yeah, that's a really good setup. I think that Dinwiddie has come in and the word professional gets thrown around a lot, and he has been totally professional in that he is figuring out, what do I need to do to help the team win, as opposed to what do I need to do to get my next contract, because his contract is expiring. And he's choosing to lean in on whatever the things are that he thinks that the team needs in that particular time, and then do them pretty well. And he has enough skill and enough talent, which isn't always the case in the buyout market, when you might get somebody at the end of their career, where he can then deliver upon those things. And so that's just a total win for the Lakers to get him essentially for free without having to give up assets. And then to get him, he gets the credit for this, of course, not the Lakers, but to have him coming in with this type of mindset and this type of mentality. And that is how he carries himself around the facility, and just, you know, pregame and postgame. He gets it, I guess, is the simplest way to put it. And Pete, the contrast to that is how the Garbage Time group plays.
Don't get me started.
It played last night. And it just, yeah, it's like, I know you guys are watching that the same as me. I almost asked a question about it in the postgame just to underscore the point, but the lack of seriousness in a game that wasn't like, they aren't up 50, and the way that unit plays, complete opposite of Spencer Dinwiddie. And guess what? Dinwiddie was plus like
35
or something.
35. He was plus 35.
Plus 35. And then that unit got outscored by 12 points in the final couple of minutes. You know, just the those are the total polar opposites.
I'm going to let that pass sail out of bounds because I'm not touching that one. That one's been irritating me all year watching that group, like way too comfortable. I want to change the subject, Mike, to one of your passions, which is beating the Sacramento Kings. We're not going to record tomorrow. We'll be back on Thursday.
But first of all, to clarify, my passion is making sure everybody understands that they're not as good as what the narrative was the last couple of years. I predicted them to finish ninth in the West, and I may have been a little bit high on them.
We'll see. Yes. They may be fading fast. But talk to me, Mike. This is a team that we play, a couple of teams, Denver, Dallas, and Sacramento are the first three that come to mind, where almost every game kind of goes the same way or very similarly. We've had two very similar losses to Sacramento that were close, but at least the second one, the one at home, they kicked our butts. But early in the year, we lost to them in a nip and tuck game where I thought they both kind of went the same way. Their team, Sabonis, can give AD some problems. This is the same thing with Sabonis and Jokic and Nurkic, those big physical dudes that can give them a chicken wing. And obviously Fox, you know, or I'm sorry, and Malik Monk has been playing very well. Talk to me, Mike, about kind of where they're vulnerable and how we need to attack them.
I just think that when a team really comes to play against Sacramento, they generally do well. And Sacramento, though, is good enough and skilled enough offensively, and they're able to get a lot of wins because of their system and because they have, like, Fox is great late. But they're not a particularly serious defensive team. Just look at the personnel. And Sabonis at the five is the first part of that. It's just, there's always an easy way to attack and to get downhill and get to the rim. They don't have particularly good wings defensively that can keep you out of the paint. Harrison Barnes and Kevin Huerter, their guards, while, you know, again, Fox is a great player, but they play a lot of Monk with Fox, and that is a small backcourt. If they play Davion Mitchell, who is good at point of attack, he has a lot of other weaknesses. So it's just not a team that is that talented. And so I give them a lot of credit. I give Mike Brown a lot of credit for having them be, you know, in the mix in the West to finish where they did last year. The real reason, though, I think that they finished as high as they did, and even that they have as many wins as they do right now, is that they've been the healthiest team in the league. And again, they get credit for that. Their training staff gets credit for that. Their players get credit for that, for playing through, for not taking nights off. So I'm not trying to be totally critical. I'm just judging them in the context of, is there any other team in the of the top 10 in the West that you would pick them to beat in a playoff series? For me, the answer is no. You guys might have an answer there, but I think when you really hunker down against them, follow a game plan, and are serious, there are such weaknesses that to attack that I don't think anybody else has. And you mentioned Sabonis could give AD problems. Yes, but not when AD is like, okay, like we need to win this game from a standings perspective, I think. And I think it's the same with it with if you're serious and you're getting back in transition. And I should mention Keegan Murray, like he's made some gains and he's played well this year, even though he's in a little bit of a mini slump right now. This to me is the two games that the Kings beat the Lakers earlier, I didn't think they came out with particularly serious efforts. And then they tried to get back late and they almost did. But if from the jump they play with a serious style, this, I guess, is a good test for what my theory has been about these two teams. And so if the Lakers don't take care of them, then I'll have to revisit my perspective on this.
Pete, the thing to me about the Kings is that, as Mike noted, they are not a very good defensive team. I think they probably do about as good as they can with the defensive talent that they have. They're not bottom five in the league. They're bottom 10 in the league. And they're a top 15 offense. I will say about their offense, though, and I think this ties into the defensive point, is that the Kings put pressure on you offensively. And that's how, like, their best defense is their offense sort of idea. And so when they get hot and when they start to score and when they control the tempo and the tenor and the tone of the game, it inherently puts a pressure on you offensively to have to keep up and match with them. And if you're not, that pressure starts to mount, and then suddenly you're down 8, 10, 12, 15 points, and making that run feels a little bit more daunting. And the Kings can make you trade 2 for 3. They can get on the offensive glass. They can do a lot of little things to chip away at the margins in order to blast you if you are not playing a serious brand of basketball. And even if you are playing a serious brand of basketball, the great equalizer is always shot making. I swear, man, you can listen to a Kings fan and they will tell you on any given night, like, is Kevin Huerter ever going to make a shot? And then you watch him play against the Lakers on any given night, and it's just like, oh, Kevin Huerter has come out and hit 4 of his first 5 3-point attempts, and he's got 15 points in the first like 15 minutes or whatever, right? And on down the line, whether it's a player like Huerter, Mike already highlighted the top level guys, right? Fox and Monk and Sabonis, but it's the Huerters and the Trey Lyleses and the Harrison Barneses and then the Keegan Murrays of the world, that those guys start to, if any of those guys get going, and it's like a 9-point effort from this guy in a quarter, that pressure mounts a little bit. And so I'm with both of you that there's a seriousness that the Lakers need to bring to this matchup. But I also think that they can't get caught up in playing like the Kings' style of basketball. And it's the Lakers who need to set the tone. And for all of the stuff that Mike is talking about, which I think there's truth in a lot of that, that identity stuff that the Kings have established over the last couple of years, for them, that's real. And they believe in that stuff. And when they bring it every single night, if the other team is willing to let them bring it, then the Kings are going to win most of the time. And that's why I am looking for, as you laid out, Pete, like a certain amount of like, oh no, this is our time now. And I think that will start with LeBron and with...
Yeah, I think the starters are going to be crucial with that. One of the things I thought was interesting about the recent schedule is that I think Denver is the team that puts most pressure on your team size. And I think OKC is right near the top of teams that put most pressure on your team foot speed. And so despite a fantastic win in last night's game, starters did not play well. And that is, I think they're going to be similarly challenged in that with Rui at the three, he's probably chasing around a Keegan Murray or a Kevin Huerter. Now, the Lakers switched more in last night's game in a way that I think will be super important to sort of addressing that weakness. But that foot speed issue, I think that it's interesting, D, to play two teams kind of on the different ends of the spectrum. They're more similar to OKC.
Pete, talk to me a little bit more about switching and how that could gum up a Kings offense that is very motion-oriented and five-out style, the way that the Warriors play and to a certain extent the way that the Lakers play, and how that could potentially help shut off their water or slow them down.
Yeah, it comes with some complications as well, but one of the big things that you'll see Sacramento try is make Rui run, right? We've talked about Rui from a lateral perspective is if he's guarding Murray or Huerter, you'll probably see a lot of plays where it's like Iverson cuts or cuts where they're going from one side of the court to the other to get Rui in that wheel of like moving side to side and rotating. And eventually professional shooters like Murray and Huerter will create some separation off of that. And so what switching does is it counters that. It's like, we're not going to ask Rui to chase these guys around because we know that that's not what he does particularly well. We're going to switch these actions. Now, this is something that when I talked earlier about how the games have gone kind of similarly, we have ended up switching down the stretch of games. But what's happened has been with those smaller groups, it's AD ends up on Fox or Monk beyond the three-point line. And it's very smart of them to do this because like Fox or especially Malik will make those crazy shots some of the time. It's one-on-one and it's a little sidestep three. So you've got a decent chance of the shot going in the first place. You also, underneath the basket, have one of the very best rebounders in the league. And this is something we didn't even touch on AD in the game last night, but he absolutely wrecked shop amongst guys that just could not guard him on OKC. Sabonis can do that to our smaller guys as well. And so when that shot goes up, even if Malik or Fox don't make that shot, you've got a pretty good chance of getting that ball and you're going to have crashers as well. And so how do the Lakers address that? How do they switch? If they play that with the same level of intensity and attention to detail that they did against OKC, they should win the game, right? But it is that they will challenge you to make that extra effort, those six rebounds that Prince got from dropping down and putting a body on a guy and tapping it, right, by hook or by crook, get the rebound. That's the Kings are going to require that out of the Lakers. So one last thing, Mike, go ahead.
To just turn to a very quick familiar point for me, that this is a game that, to me, if LeBron and AD come out with a certain mentality, then the rest will follow rather quickly. And their physicality against, just like against OKC, because Sacramento is a smaller team, like their physicality, I think, can be overwhelming if they're in the mood. And, you know, think of any of the games that the Lakers have won in recent times. And when they're on their P's and Q's like that, I think that goes a long way towards everything.
Amen to that. And it starts on the defensive end. All right, we'll be back on Thursday to talk about how the game went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic
trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.